I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome in on this Friday night to the fastest 2 hours in radio. We have another outstanding lineup in tonight's show as we will hit on a variety of subjects. We're going to lead things off and head out to my old stomping grounds in the beautiful Four Corners. In fact, that's where our show originated back in 1999 with Pacific Star Communications. We are looking forward to catching up with Fox Sports Radio, Steve Bortstein, who I had the true pleasure catching up with on a Memorial Day weekend during my recent excursion to New Mexico. Hello, my friend. How are you?
I am well, Alyssa. How are you?
Well, never a dull moment. Why don't you indulge all of our listeners tonight, because set the stage on our recent outing and play-by-play at the Rookie's Bar there in Farmington.
I don't necessarily know if the people that we ran into there were necessarily fans or just weary travelers, but either way, it was quite an experience. It was great seeing you. First time I'd seen you in several years, and it was just good to catch up on old times. And yeah, it was a nice experience. I would probably recommend maybe a different location for our reconciliation next time. But all in all, it was a fun time.
Well, I have to admit, you know, I was being a bit nostalgic because when our show was out in Farmington, we used to have our live remotes out there at Rookie's Bar. So perhaps, I don't know, we'll go uptown, maybe go to like Three Rivers Brewery or something like that next
Either
time.
Either way, well, it was good to see you, and it was good to catch up on basketball, good to catch up on sports. So always a good time.
Well, okay, so let's move ahead. Let's talk some NBA. How about the Thunder, the Spurs series? How much confidence level do you have that the Spurs will come out on top?
You know, I if you'd asked me that a week ago, I would have thought they were a no-brainer. And I guess I just don't feel that way right now. I mean, after we've seen the home and home go in the first four games, the return of Serge Ibaka, you know, for the Thunder has really revitalized them a little bit. So
sure.
I'm not so confident as I used to be about them. And I'll say this, I don't know if necessarily it matters. I mean, just from what I've seen, and obviously, you know, the Eastern Conference still has to play itself out. We'll talk more about them in a moment. But the way the Miami Heat seem to have dominated at least the games they've won in their Eastern Conference Finals, I just think it doesn't matter who comes out of the Western Conference. I just don't see a way that Miami loses this time around. As much as that pains me to say so, Miami just looks like when they want to turn on that second gear, that there really just doesn't appear to be a team that can beat them.
Well, that's going to be a series that's going to be very interesting how that plays out. But I want to back up just a moment.
Right.
You talked about the return of Serge Ibaka. His impact has certainly been huge and obviously had that miraculous recovery. But is it as simple as saying that the return of Serge has turned the series around?
I think it is, and I think it's not. I also think the home court advantage thing has played itself out here. San Antonio won their games at home. Oklahoma City came back and won theirs at home. So there's certainly that factor, I think, that goes into it. And I think it is the return of Serge Ibaka, because what he has done is he has forced the Spurs to play more of that outside game. Going inside is not as easy now as it was before, at least in the first few games. And now it's forced San Antonio to be more of a perimeter shooting team, which I don't think they're necessarily better at than Oklahoma City. They certainly can transition the ball better. Oklahoma City can with having Serge Ibaka back in the lineup. And I think that's been the key to those last. I think that was the key to games 3 and 4.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
Just the ability to turn the ability to turn rebounds and defensive rebounds into quick transition points, especially in game 4. Russell Westbrook was just out of his mind in game 4.
Crazy. Yeah, we're going to talk about Russell Westbrook here in a minute, but going back, talking about Serge, I mean, just such a huge difference in terms of his rim protection, his mobility, the defensive presence, and that really has certainly helped things. I mean, that's been the focal point that Scott Brooks has talked so much about, that they have got to get better defensively, and we saw that in Game 3 and Game 4, only allowed the Spurs, as far as points in the paint, 40 in Game 3 and 36 in Game 4.
And you mentioned, you know, Scott Brooks emphasizing it. It seems now that Greg Popovich has had to, you know, kind of remind his team about that a little bit as well. He made reference to it in the post-game press conference in Game 4 that he thought he was going to have to show a picture, you know, to his players on San Antonio, reminding them, hey, this guy blocks shots. So I don't want to say San Antonio took them for granted. I don't want to say that because that sounds preposterous at this level. But, you know, when he wasn't there in Games 1 and 2, I think San Antonio might have assumed, hey, we're not going to have him around, so we don't have to prepare for him. But now that Serge Ibaka is back, it'll be interesting to see how this, how as it plays out here, you know, over the course of the next several days, how it plays out that San Antonio does, in fact, you know, use Serge Ibaka's reemergence in this series now in turning things back around for themselves.
That's right. The Spurs looking for adjustments, trying to find solutions. Hey, Steve Bortstein of Fox Sports New Mexico. He is host of First Sports. And oh, by the way, got to send out a congratulations to you, Steve. Winner of, this is the fifth straight year in a row, the New Mexico Broadcasters Association for Sports Talk. What, caster of the year or show of the year?
I'm starting to think I'm running unopposed. I'm starting to think that they just give me the award. They give me the award to keep me quiet or keep me happy. I don't really know if I'm deserving of it, but it's a great honor. As always, the New Mexico Broadcasters Association has been kind enough to bestow this honor on me now for the fifth consecutive year, and it's great, and it's also a very humbling reminder of the people that I work with, yourself included, and the people that help make my show, and you know all the other appearances that I do around the country. It's only because of those people that I have this opportunity.
Okay, so Steve, you talked about Russell Westbrook, and he was indeed unbelievable in Game 4. What a performance! I mean, you talk about show me the money, 40 points, 10 assists, 5 steals, and 20 of those points, by the way, were drives to the basket. Is that the best game you think you've ever seen him play?
One of them. It's certainly the best one he's played, you know, since his return from the various injuries he's had the last couple of years.
Incredible.
And I think when you think about that right now, you know, and that was something that Kevin Durant talked about, you know, a few weeks ago when he won the MVP award, that, you know, look, this is an award that is, you know, named to me, but it's really because of the talent around him. And I thought Kevin Durant was very humble in that, in saying that. I took that, you know, very seriously when he said that. And it is about the rest of the team. You know, obviously Kevin Durant's an amazing talent, but Kevin Durant can't do this himself, and he knows that. And Russell Westbrook, you know, has had, you know, he's faced a little bit of criticism from time to time for being, you know, almost taking too many shots or being a little bit too reckless at times. But his focus has been amazing, not just in this series, but throughout this postseason, I think.
I just love his swagger, his passion, his fire. You're talking about harnessing his aggression. It can't be 1-on-5. So is there a better 1-2 punch in basketball than Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant?
Yeah, and Dwayne Wade and LeBron James.
Okay.
And that's the problem. That's like I said, that's the problem with either one of these teams advancing, is that I just don't know that if on, you know, when they turn their game on, and certainly we saw that the other night in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals when LeBron James got into foul trouble. The team only, I think, took like 8 or 9 free throws in Game 5 of that Eastern Conference Final. When that team plays their game and you allow them to play their game, they're going to be so much better. And unfortunately, for both San Antonio and Oklahoma City, from a defensive standpoint, I think that plays right into Miami's hands. They want to be aggressive in the lane. They want to make you foul them. They want to go to the free throw lines. And that's what's going to happen, I think, to either one of these two Western Conference teams that come out.
Okay, so let's talk about the Eastern Conference, the Pacers, the Heat. That game just got underway tonight. What are your takeaways from this particular series?
That Indiana is a very dysfunctional team, and that Indiana on their best day, when everyone's on the same page and everyone's not trying to blame the officiating or, you know, trying to, you know, trash talk LeBron James, that when they want to focus and play basketball, they're very good. But when Roy Hibbert disappears, when Lance Stephenson decides that he wants to try and, you know, get into the head of LeBron James, when they start playing games, they don't succeed. And I think this is a very dysfunctional team that, you know, once they figure out what their job is and what they figure out, you know, what they want to be when they grow up, I think they're a very good basketball team. But unfortunately, it's just too many mental lapses, and that's the problem with this team. Game one was fantastic. Game five was fantastic. But two, three, and four, they just, you know, seemingly had one issue after another. And I've always maintained, Alyssa, and I know you'll agree with this, that if you're relying on officials to help you win a basketball game, then you've already lost. And when you go into a post-game press conference like they did after game four and then say, oh, well, we outplayed the Heat, but they beat us at the free throw line. Well, then that's a lot. That's relying on the officiating. And at that point, you've already lost that game. If you're worried about officiating beating you, you've already lost.
Okay, we are flat out of time. Steve Bortstein has been with us at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. You can listen to him at Fox Sports New Mexico. Steve, what else you got going on you want to direct our listeners to?
Belmont coming up next weekend.
All right.
The Fast Track radio show that I do every Saturday and Sunday morning on Fox and, of course, on the iHeartRadio app. And you can get a lot of information on First Sports all next week as we relate to the Belmont Stakes. And coming up next Saturday with a little chance at racing history, see if California Chrome can win the Triple Crown next Saturday.
Always a pleasure having you on, Steve. You take care. I'll talk to you real soon. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Much more straight ahead in Hour 1 at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you're with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And I tell you what, we are going to change things up big time. We're going to take time for a book review right here at Yahoo Sports Radio. We have a very special selection. We've got a great guest tonight. We've invited on one of the best, most recognized professional cyclists who just released his book, George Hincapie. And he has teamed up with Craig Hummer to share his story in professional cycling. Hi, George. How are you this evening?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to tell you, it is an absolute fascinating read. You reflect on your career as a world-class rider, and it's an honest, it's a compelling account of the highs, the lows throughout your career. But I'd love for you to share with all of our listeners tonight across the country how you got involved in cycling, because it really was what your father's passion, his love for the sport, that inspired you to be a part of it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. My dad was a huge passionate cycling. He's still a cyclist. He still is to this day. He rides all the time, drives my mom crazy. But he got us into it at a very young age, and you know, really sacrificed a lot as a young father, making sure we had the bikes and the transportation to races all over the East Coast at a very young age. And you know, I know all the time he dedicated for me to become the cyclist that I became.
And of course, cycling was such a big part of your family. When did you, George, have the realization that you could make a career out of it, that you could turn pro, and that you were able to compete with the very best?
Of course, you never really know until you get there, but I knew early on that I was a lot better than the kids my age, and then I slowly eventually started beating kids a lot older than I was at the time, and I just kept hearing from people that had a lot of experience in the sport that, you know, if I really stuck to it and I really wanted it, that I had the talent to go a long way. And, you know, I ended up believing them and getting there.
Talk to us about, as far as the preparation to be, you know, a champion, to be a cyclist. I mean, it's so based on, as you had mentioned in the book, in terms of the preparation, the training, what to eat, when to rest. What all goes into that with the sport?
Well, it's a lot of lonely hours on the bike, a lot of training, a lot of counting calories. It's all about power to weight ratio on the bicycle. You know, there's a lot of travel involved once you get to that level, a lot of time away from home. It requires moving away to a European country because that's where most of the biggest races are. So it's a big commitment.
Physically, yeah, you've got to be in top condition. But what about the mental aspect of the sport? As you were talking about, I guess you really do have to embrace solitude and that loneliness because you're out there for a long time all by yourself, collecting your thoughts.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the mental aspect as well, and the performance aspect of it as well is very important. You know, it's mainly physical, but you have to be in a very strong mental state to get good results in all of the races.
The great George Hincapie is along with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're talking about his new book, Reliving a Lot of Memories. The foreword is written by your good friend, Lance Armstrong, and he had high praise for you. I love the fact that he talked about, yes, your consistency, very dependable, but just you were the exemplary teammate and really gave him a boost when he needed it.
Yeah, I think it was a well-written foreword, and I appreciated the words that he said about me, and and we've been through a lot. We spent several years where we didn't even talk throughout a lot of the stuff that was happening. So it's good that we are back on good terms, and you know, he understands the choices that I had to make along the way, and it's nice that we're friends again.
Lance Armstrong, obviously a ton of history between you two, and you've got the what record 17-time Tour de France participant. What was Lance like as a teammate and his integral part of your success?
Well, during that time, he was a very huge factor in the team. He was the leader of the team and sort of the closer of the team. But as you see in the book, my career was obviously a lot centered around my success with Lance, but also with other riders that are still out there today racing. And there is a lot of contribution in the book from those riders as well. So it's just an interesting tale of 19 years as a professional cyclist.
George, share with us, we were mentioning before we got on air tonight, that just how much the sport has changed, how much has evolved. Can you expand on that and kind of provide some insight on just the sport of cycling and how much it has changed?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's no question that we were thrown into a really messed up era of the sport. And we were, at the time, we felt like we had no other choice to do the things that we did. And I know now that those were the wrong choices. But I also saw a drastic change in the mentality of the riders and the culture of the sport. Riders just got fed up with the whole doping thing and didn't want to deal with that anymore. And it really started to change within a long time before any of this investigation happened. And I got to witness, for the last 7-8 years of my career, riders winning races clean and winning some of the biggest races in the world clean. And that's just a lot more fun. You know, we only have to worry about your nutrition and your training and really just focusing on that and none of the other stuff. It makes it a lot simpler and funner.
What is your belief on cycling right now and where it stands? Do you believe the sport is clean?
I believe the sport is generally clean. I know that the riders that I was racing with, I didn't see anything that it would indicate otherwise, and I saw them winning. Guys like Mark Cavendish, he's won over 20 stages of the Tour de France, Goodell Evans, TJ Van Garderen, one of the best American talents that we have right now, is a real Tour de France contender. And, I spent a ton of time with him, countless amount of hours in rooms together, and I know that he doesn't even think about that factor because the sport truly is different now.
We've been visiting with George Hincapie, one of the most recognized riders in the world, has numerous world championships and professional victories. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, George, and congratulations, as you just had another baby boy, right?
Yes, that's correct.
That's exciting. Congratulations to you and your family. Listen, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Much more straight ahead at YSR, the big esports show. Okay, we are back with you on this Friday night at YSR, the Quicken Loans Studios, and it is so hard to believe that we are closing in on the 1/3 mark of the baseball season, and right now it is time for us to head out west. We're going to give you an update on the Los Angeles Dodgers and find out where they currently stand. Of course, this past week, big news with Josh Beckett. He throws a no-hitter against the Phillies, the first of his career and only the 24th no-hitter in Dodgers history. Very much looking forward to our next conversation. It is always an honor to visit with the former general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Mr. Fred Clare. Good evening, Fred. It's nice to have you with us.
Alyssa, good to be with you.
Well, what a season it has been for the Dodgers. Let's dissect. Let's break it all down. They have weathered a number of injuries, and they've had to muscle through some defensive woes. Just kind of give us your summation of the Dodgers' season so far.
Well, I think the biggest thing, Alyssa, from my viewpoint, is that the pitching has really come around. The no-hitter that you've mentioned by Josh Beckett was really big for them because he's not the, obviously a very accomplished pitcher, but he's not the guy they're counting on to be one or two. Those roles are filled. But when you see that type of game out of Josh, and then the pitching of Clayton Kershaw and Greinke, they're really in just a very, very solid position. And so I think the outlook is very good. San Francisco's having a tremendous season. And that's all on the plus side for them. But I think the Dodger pitching is going to be the key to this race because pitching is always the key.
Well, Fred, how special was it for Josh Beckett to throw a no-hitter after the injuries and all he's been through and facing those doubters?
Well, I think looking at it from a historical standpoint, Alyssa, what I noted was that it was the first no-hitter since Hideo Nomo had pitched a no-hitter for the Dodgers in Colorado, I was there that night. That was a very special night.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have all of that information in front of me, but I think it was like 1996.
Uh-huh.
So it just shows what that shows is the rarity. And I was fortunate to be the Dodger general manager during a number of no-hit games. But when you really look at that, and I think you mentioned the number 20-something in the long, long history of the Dodgers, what that really shows is just how rare that accomplishment is. So a tremendous game by Josh, and I know a big boost for the Dodgers. And I think all of that is great to see.
The former general manager and executive vice president of the Los Angeles Dodgers is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, we're talking about Fred Clare. So you were talking about how impressive the rotation has been, the pitching for the Dodgers. Talk to us about the return of Clayton Kershaw, number 22. What has his return meant?
Well, I think Clayton really, if he's not the best pitcher in the game, he's one, two, or three. When you have that type of dominant pitcher that you have in Clayton, it's just a tremendous boost for a staff. You know that every 4 or 5 days that this guy's going to come out there and he's going to give you a great, great game. But the thing that impresses me about Clayton is not just the quality of the pitching, but the quality of the person. I haven't had the opportunity to get to know Clayton, but all that I see, all that I read, this young man is just an incredible young man who has handled all of the success in the best possible way. And what that really means to me is that he's a pitcher who's not going to be distracted by fame, not going to be distracted by fortune, and he has both of those things certainly now, but is just going to have the enjoyment of the game, always very much involved with his teammates. Clayton Kershaw is just a tremendous individual, and the Dodgers are so fortunate to have him. And the scouting director, Logan White, who's a friend, and I've had Logan at the class that I've taught at Caltech to give his insight to the game and scouting, but he really nailed it absolutely right when he drafted Clayton.
Well, Clayton Kershaw, the highest paid pitcher in baseball history, obviously a very big investment by the Dodgers, but isn't it remarkable just to watch the perspective, as you were talking about, that he has at such a young age?
Yes, the things that he's done on the mound, the way that he's handled himself off the mound, the charitable good work that he and his wife have been involved with. This is what you want to see in a pitcher, and it really has to do, Elise, and that's why I mentioned the scouting director, Logan White. But when you're out and you're scouting pitchers, you're scouting more than players, more than pitchers. You're scouting really the character of an individual, and that is going to be so important to the success of that player and to your team. The makeup, the character of the player is probably one of the areas that doesn't carry the importance when you read the scouting reports, in my view, that it should, because it really needs to fall at the very top. And Clayton, again, exemplifies all of that.
You know, as a former general manager of the Dodgers, how much does character factor in when you
it's
were...
It's huge.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's huge, and it's always been critically important. It will always be critically important. In some ways, it may be even more important today, and the reason I say that, Elise, is that the money is so great. The exposure, the fame is so great. The potential distractions are so great that the character issue becomes even more important than it's ever been. It's always been vital. And I was fortunate to know so many great Dodger players through the years. And even going back to now what would almost be a historic time. But having had the opportunity to know people like Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson, and Pee Wee Reese, and Carl Erskine, a friend today, Duke Snider. These were not only great players, It's no wonder that they had so much success. It's no wonder that they found their place into the Hall of Fame, because these people were tremendous individuals, tremendous human beings that you just, it was just such a joy and an honor to have that type of friendship.
Tonight we are shining the spotlight on the Los Angeles Dodgers. We are going one-on-one with the former general manager, the executive VP, and one of the guys we've got to definitely talk about is Yasiel Puig, who has been absolutely fantastic. He's had quite a season, an MVP caliber season in my estimation. I mean, is he, Fred, is he the best right fielder in baseball?
Oh, if he's not, I don't know who's ahead of him. He's just a... one of those extraordinary talents, and all the things that he can do are all the things that the scouts dream about. The power, the speed, the arm, the daring. This young man is just a incredible talent, and so he the future for him. The ceiling is, I don't know where it is, because he's so young and to have that type of talent. And I saw a stat the other day about the home runs that he's hit in the number of games that he's played for the Dodgers. I don't know exactly what it was, whether in his career now he's played 150 games or whatever. And the only two players, it was interesting, who had hit more home runs in that number of games, and this may have been Los Angeles Dodgers, mm-hmm. so I don't know quite how to qualify that.
Right.
But the names were Frank Howard and Mike Piazza.
Wow.
And you really think about it. Think about that for a moment, because that really speaks to power hitters. Frank Howard, a huge man. Mike Piazza, an incredibly strong guy. Puig's in that class for home runs. But that's not really Puig's total game. To have that type of power, to have that type of speed, to have that type of athletic ability, running ability, that's off the charts. That you find it hard to find players to compare him to from a talent perspective. He's absolutely off the charts when you grade him on talent.
Well, Yasiel, offensively, you're talking about power hitter, but it is his speed, his athleticism, and I thought manager Don Mattingly said it best, that the way he plays right field, he really stops the running game from first to third. I mean, he really does take care of business defensively, doesn't he?
Well, that's what they're hoping for. I mean, he's prone to errors,
mm-hmm.
as are a lot of young players, and he's prone to errors because he will. His athletic talent is so great that he will occasionally make a mistake that's just out of carelessness. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, I don't say that as a criticism. So he's gifted. He's just a totally gifted player.
We're going around the horn with Los Angeles Dodgers former general manager and executive vice president Fred Clair. We're going to step aside for commercial break, and we'll be right back with much more. The former general manager, the executive vice president of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Mr. Fred Clair, is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're having a wonderful conversation, and we'd love for you to weigh in. We'd love to hear from you. You can join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And how about, we were talking about just earlier, high-character guys. Guys that are coachable. What about D. Gordon? I mean, I've been hearing fantastic things about him, and he's certainly becoming the fastest player, 30 stolen bases in 5 years?
Yeah, he's made, at least I have to qualify all of this to the standpoint, like about 70% of Southern California, I don't get to see the Dodgers on television.
Okay, we've got to get into that, yes.
So I speak at a at a disadvantage, really. I'm a DirecTV subscriber, as is, I think, Vin Scully.
I am, too.
So we're missing.
Right.
We're missing much of a great, great season. And I don't think in my lifetime, my time involved with the Dodgers and before the Dodgers, there's never been a season where I've seen so few games. But so you follow it, as do many Dodger fans, somewhat at a distance. I mean, again, just factually stated. But in following it, because I care about it and have a history there, obviously, I've been very impressed with what I've seen of D. Gordon, because I saw him when he came up, like a lot of young players, prone to mistakes. He's a young player who has to utilize his speed if he's going to be successful. Dee Gordon hitting the ball into the air is, for the most part, a mistake. But when he puts the ball in play with that type of speed that he has, and in looking at him, and I think his on-base percentage has been very good, his stolen base is great, he has really made very, very significant strides, because those aren't easy strides. A young player like that, not as much experience, sometimes can be overwhelmed by the opposing pitchers. But this young man is holding his own and then some.
Okay, Fred Clare is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I want you to touch on the Dodgers have been battling this TV deal all year long. What the reports say that 70% of L.A. cannot watch games on TV. I mean, how much does that affect your fan base morale?
Well, what it really results in, I think, is the obvious, Elisa. It results in tremendous frustration. Because you have a great legion of fans, and they're really being deprived of seeing the game and seeing the games, and they're really the victims in many ways of a major negotiation. And what's interesting to me from a business standpoint, it's not just the Dodgers and Time Warner and the local distributors, be it DirecTV or Charter or others. If you step back from a business standpoint, what you really have to see is that the whole communications business is in such a consolidation and fascinating from a business aspect, because here you have Comcast attempting to buy Time Warner, and you have AT&T attempting to buy DirecTV. That in many ways, the Dodger fan doesn't care, because the only thing he cares about, and rightfully so, he can't get the game on television. But what's really happening is the negotiations, even above those negotiations in Los Angeles, are being impacted. And I'm afraid they're being impacted to the point that it could very well be that the Dodgers don't appear on television for the remainder of this season, other than Time Warner. That means 70% of Southern California isn't seeing Dodger baseball. You know what? That's not a good story. That is not a good story.
That is not a good story. So when do you anticipate that this will be resolved?
I have no idea. I have no idea, except it's because it's so complicated in its structure. And Lisa, the other thing is that the dollars are so great. The magnitude of this is so great. When you look at what Time Warner paid to the Dodgers over, think about it, over $8 billion over, I believe, what, 25 years?
Wow.
$200 million plus a year. And that business move was with the thought, I can only presume, and I'm sure, that they would be able then to spin that off to the charters, to the DirecTVs, to the other carriers. But ultimately, what's happened in sports, you know who the ultimate payer of this is, the ultimate supporter of this is?
Mm-hmm.
It's you, me, and Joe Fan.
That's right.
And that's a major, major problem for the business of sports. And this really, in many ways, is just the tip of the iceberg, because there's always the assumption that the fan will pay. And teams are being sold now for historically high rates. The Los Angeles Clippers are going to sell for more than $1 billion.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. The Clippers, with all due respect. So it's a, Elisa, it's more of a subject for one of my sports business classes, because it really has to do with the things that are at play that the fan doesn't take the time to really, or have the time to really study, and nor should he, but he's being impacted. Being impacted because he's paying for his cable television or his DirecTV, and he's not having the opportunity to see something that he cares about. So when this is really resolved, how all of this plays out, I'm not sure, and I don't know that anybody is sure. because there are some of these regional television networks that you know that are going out of business or into bankruptcy. And this is not good business.
Okay, the former general manager, the executive vice president of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Fred Claire, is joining us at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. And, of course, it was very well publicized coming into the season. So much scrutiny and attention with the Dodgers having the highest payroll. I mean, history-making, what, $229 million? Oh, by the way, that's $30 million more than the Yankees. So my question to you, Fred Claire, is the Dodgers' payroll, is it worth it? I mean, that is you're talking about shelling out some serious coin.
Well, I think obviously the Dodgers feel that it's worth it, and you know, if you look back at the deal that Guggenheim made in paying $2 billion for the team, well calculated. Why well calculated? They got an $8 billion deal with Time Warner. So these guys are smart guys. They're not spending money. They're making good, sound business decisions in their view. And I'm not going to quarrel with any of that. I wish I would.
Sure.
My highest payroll was $48 million.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So I'm not going to, you know, as a general manager, you fight. I fought for the highest payroll that I could obtain because I wanted to attempt to put the best possible team on the field. But in those days, there were different budgets, you know, every team has its limits. Every team has its budgets. But the fact is that the payrolls continue to escalate. The Dodgers find themselves now at the very top rung. And why? Because their television revenue is at the very top rung.
Okay, so Fred, we are quickly running out of time. I have to ask you, certainly elbows seem as fragile as ever, an injury epidemic in terms of the Tommy John surgery. Do you want to weigh in on this? And why is it happening so frequently? It's been unprecedented.
Well, it's the focus, Elisa, is on the major league level, the players having these injuries. Dr. Job, the dear, dear friend of mine, was a dear friend before he passed away recently. What's really happening is not happening at the major league level. It's a result, Elisa, of what's happening at the youth level. The youth leagues, the high schools, the other youth leagues, pitchers are throwing pitches, the types of pitches, and trying to gain velocity before their arms are fully developed. And the problems that we're seeing at the major league level are not going to be resolved until we get better programs with more emphasis on health and not velocity at the youth league level.
Fred Claire has been with us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, of course, the former general manager, executive vice president for the Los Angeles Dodgers. It is always an honor. Thank you so much, Fred, and I look forward to catching up with you again real soon, okay?
Lisa, good to be with you.
Absolutely. Much more at YSR. Stay close.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.